I think on the phone we have actually Peter Carlin, who is the country manager for Vestas, both here in Australia and in New Zealand. Is that right, Peter? Are you with us?
Yeah, hi guys. That's correct.
Great. So what is Vestas and what's going to happen here in Geelong? Can you just explain to us?
Yeah, sure. So Vestas is a global company. We are listed on the Danish stock market. We've been around for over 100 years, but we've been making wind turbines since the 1970s. So really, you know, the original boom in wind turbines getting larger than just a sort of individual household scale was very much something that our company was involved in from the earliest days in Denmark, when the Danish government and a bunch of, you know, grassroots folks, there were groups of teachers and folk who started building large wind turbines experimentally. We go back to the roots of that, and with the oil shocks of the 70s, the Danish government decided to put in place some visionary sort of tax incentives to encourage local production of electricity through other means, and wind was the logical one. It's a pretty windy place, Denmark.
Yeah. I can account for that. I've lived there most of my life.
Well, I've just come back from Jutland, which is the Western Island, which is just incredibly windy, and there's a good reason why they do stuff there. So look, you know, Vestas has been in Australia, actually in Victoria, for over 20 years now. We've installed around about half the wind turbines by capacity in Australia and New Zealand. We've actually even had manufacturing presence in Australia before. We had we established a blade factory in Portland over a decade ago, and a similar sort of facility to make the nacelle, the sort of hub of the machine in Tasmania. Unfortunately, with the stop and start nature of the Australian industry and Australian policy, we never got to critical mass with those factories, and they had to close. So what we're doing now is, thanks to the sort of support provided by the Victorian Renewable Energy Target, so a bit more, in effect, a market incentive that gives us a bit more vision of the market going forward, so it lets us invest a bit, rather than simply, you know, pragmatically build what we can as cheap as we can and you know, protect ourselves against things just dropping off the cliff again afterwards. Because the VRET's given us greater certainty, we've been appointed preferred contractors for two large wind farms in Victoria as a consequence of the VRET. And in return, what we're able to do is to bring a bunch of initiatives actually to Geelong. So why Geelong? We actually looked around at the start of this year exhaustively at a number of regional centres around Victoria. We wanted a place that not only had some relevance to wind, so it needed to be close to where the projects were, but also had the right sort of workforce for us. So we needed a reasonably well-educated industrial workforce. We need good transport connections. Ideally tertiary connections as well, tertiary education connections. So we got all of that in Geelong, the standout place to do this sort of work. Obviously, the transition from the motor car sector to the future, we've got a real opportunity there to pick up some of that sort of workforce.
That's so good to hear, because this is what we can say we've been talking about for 5 years in this radio show here, that this would be the obvious choice. I've been talking about how in Denmark we took, you know, they closed down the big ship factories because they could produce ships cheaper elsewhere in the world, but then they were turned into renewable energy factories.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
So that's fantastic to hear. So what
we're actually doing, guys, is we've learned from past mistakes. As you pointed out, there is an election coming up, and there's not consensus at the moment about what the future policies will be. So what we're doing for the volume we have at the moment is we're going to be working with manufacturers already in Geelong to expand their workforce, to skill them up, to build major components for our turbines. And we'll do that for a certain number of turbines and then we hope that there are future stages of the VRET, in which case we can further expand manufacturing. But we're trying to do this on a sustainable basis.
Yeah, so that the VRET, those targets make all the difference to you guys in terms of certainty for the future.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the government's been quite clever in the way they've organised this. It's not an unusual scenario these days around the world to hold an auction. They call it a reverse auction because obviously, you know, you're trying to beat each other with the lowest possible price. The Victorian government's added a capping mechanism to that so that the government can never be, out of pocket to an enormous degree on the cost of supporting those offtake agreements that they put in place. And then to cap it all off, the government asked us all in the industry to compete on how many sort of local jobs could be created, what sort of local initiatives could be brought about, not just for the project, but to actually build industry capability. And that's, I guess, one of the criteria that helped us be selected.
Yeah.
So, Peter, I'm sure our listeners would be asking right now, so how many people will get a new job now?
Yeah.
You know, what's the numbers?
We think it's around 25 to 27 in Geelong. We're proving that up at the moment. It'd be at least those sorts of numbers. This is in addition to the long-term jobs on the wind farms themselves and the construction jobs. This is sort of industry development as distinct from, the typical stuff you get through construction projects, which is shorter term. And one nuance to that I should mention, there's a couple of training and research initiatives also involved, which are a little bit different to standard, new manufacturing jobs. So we'll be working, building up the skills to maintain wind turbines, which is, it's going to be a significant new employer in the future. And the other thing we're doing is we're working with Deakin down in Waurn Ponds there.
Terrific.
With the Carbon Nexus facility. I don't know if you guys have spoken about that before.
Absolutely, yes. We're very, very proud of that here in Geelong.
That is a damn exciting thing. So as we, as an original equipment manufacturer in the wind game, as we look around the world for places to research carbon fiber, actually Carbon Nexus comes up as one of the best places to do it.
Terrific.
It's quite a visionary facility. One of the nice things about it is it's quite large scale, so these are genuine, production equipment that we'd be playing with down there, as distinct from small laboratory stuff or the really big stuff that's in the commercial premises. But the nice thing is it's one of the few facilities in the world that's actually accessible for research. Typically these things are proprietary and, there's only the manufacturer of that kit, has access to it. So that's difficult when you're trying to develop new product. And the aim of our game, I don't know if you're aware, but wind turbines, specifically the blades of the wind turbines, are the biggest single consumer of carbon fiber in the world. More than the automobile sector, more than the aeronautics sector. All right? We use a huge amount of carbon fiber in wind farms, in wind turbines. So, and the funny thing is, despite that, and I think Bestas we actually suspect we are the world's largest consumer in our own right. More than Boeing, more than car manufacturers, etc. Just for our blade. So, the irony is that carbon fiber has been developed typically for high-end aeronautical applications and military applications. It's never really been optimized for what we need. We need tensile and compressive strength on our carbon fiber because the blade flaps both ways. It sort of makes sense if you think about it. And that's what we're going to be researching down there. Is there a better way to achieve compressive strength with carbon fiber, which will make for longer, lighter, more efficient blades for future wind farms?
That sounds to me like at the turnaround we have been waiting for. You speak with such optimism about, both the innovation side, the research and all that, but also the production side, the jobs side of things, where people get optimistic because instead of unemployment, they start to work for a better future.
And students are involved in that too, and learning and taking that out to the world. So,
We'll be really keen to bring those learning. I mean, a certain amount of this will be pretty high end. Let's have a look under the electron microscope kind of research. So it's not going to be for school kids necessarily. But hopefully, there's a lot of learnings that come out of it, and then there'll be industrial opportunities. That come out of it as well.
What's the idea with that? It's called a renewable hub. As I hear, and not a wind turbine hub.
No, look, it could be a wind turbine hub, but it gets confusing because we're actually going to be manufacturing wind turbine hubs, and the wind turbine hub is the massive piece of cast iron in the middle of the rotor that is the blade.
Technically, okay.
So that's a hub. I'm actually misusing the term by describing our facilities as a hub, as in a centre of excellence. We're hopeful that there are future rounds of the VRAT and we'll be able to continue to build on that. So the idea is to try and get our foot in a piece of real estate to get started, to start building up that skill set in Geelong and hopefully there's more to come, you know.
Exactly, and others will wake up and see, okay, there's business here, and, you know, that can spread to an entire city when there's that sort of, let's go for this.
Yeah, how significant is it that it's happening on the back of, you know, without that government encouragement from the Victorian government, which is sadly lacking from the federal government, that this wouldn't be happening? Is that something you'd agree with, Peter?
It's absolutely correct. So, you know, the industry is doing a remarkable amount at the moment, despite a lack of federal policy. You know, the great revelation of the past few years globally in the renewables game is that we've made great strides in wind and solar on the cost front. So there's less and less of a debate. In fact, I really don't think there is a debate globally about the cost of renewables anymore.
No.
So it's all about how do we manage the transition, how do we manage the grid going forward. And that's, we're in solution mode there. That's not a, oh my God, it's impossible. That's just right. Okay, now we're moving on from 10, 20, 30% penetration by renewables up to, you know, imagining what 50 and beyond looks like and how do we manage that future grid. So that's great. That's all happening.
I'm just wondering, this is from the Danish perspective, are you flying in a lot of Danes then? Or what's it going to be like? Or is it local sort of people who are going to get jobs?
No. The aim is as localized as much as possible. It really, you know, doesn't make sense to fly people around the world for that sort of thing. Training, trainers will come out and train the workforce. But it's very much intended to be as far as possible local jobs or Victorian jobs. And, you know, that makes sense from our perspective of being a sustainable industry in the longer term. We want a skilled up workforce. We want a skilled up supply base as well.
Mm. And then I could say on top of that, we want some new laws. You know, I would like to be allowed to put a mini wind turbine in the backyard of my house. Why isn't that allowed? Stuff like that. Because we need to change the story about that wind is evil. And wind is, you know, making people sick. Yeah. And I actually think wind turbines are beautiful. I love to look at them.
Yeah. Look, certainly I think the debate's moved on from the sort of issues we were having to deal with even just 3 or 4 years ago around infrasound and that sort of thing. I think it's clear as a bell now that infrasound is not making people sick, certainly, you know, not from wind turbines and not more generally. There's a lot of infrasound out there, right? Most beaches have more infrasound than a wind farm would, but it doesn't make people sick. So I think we're moving on from that. I think noise is still a genuine issue, and there are strict standards that require us to keep a respectable distance back from houses for that reason. And we, in the technology game, we work up very, very hard to limit the noise of created by turbines. So, as our rotors get bigger, we rotate them slower, which keeps the tip speed down, which keeps the noise down. That's the critical thing we have
to do. Okay, so bigger is better when it comes to this.
Provided we can deal, you know, put gearboxes in these machines that can take extraordinary levels of torque to slow the whole process down. That's the trick. You slow the rotor as much as possible. If you simply increase the size of the rotor and increase its speed, then you'll increase its noise, and that comes with real sighting issues. So there's a technology race to maximize rotor size while minimizing noise.
So it's work in progress, but
it's happening. So the average noise of a wind turbine today is significantly less than what it would have been just a couple of years ago. So certainly the message has got through.
Peter Carlin, this was wonderful news for us. Thanks for sharing this with us and our listeners. And then we hope to hear more as you move in, and we can come out and see the premises where you're beginning to do stuff.
We'd love that. Please keep in touch.
We will.
Thanks for the show.
Terrific.
Excellent.
Thanks, Peter. Back to your meetings.
Thank you.
Terrific.
The Sustainable Hour.
For a green, clean, sustainable Geelong, the Sustainable Hour.